Call me old man Waves.
Damn you, old man!
You're old.
Damn it, Wade!
And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, the God of Stubborn and the Lord of Laughter, Old Man Wade. And I'm sitting here via Zoom with the incredible, the prolific parasite, Steve Van Sampson.
Put that crap away. Come on. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm back. You record and talk some geeky crap instead of my books, because geeky crap is way more fun, let's be real.
So we just got to see the King Kong versus Godzilla trailer.
Yeah, so, we just watched it together for the first time. Yeah. So that's a very special moment for our relationship. I feel like we've reached a new level in our relationship, because we just both sat through the King Kong versus Godzilla. So is this a movie that you are excited for? Or like...
I have been... Okay. Let me just say, I'm not a big Godzilla guy. I know of him. I watched an 8-minute, maybe 10-minute long video on the evolution of Godzilla and how they changed the way he looked and his story and all that stuff. And it was really dope to know that he's been around as long as he has and has evolved. But as far as story goes, I'm a King Kong guy. And granted, he doesn't have the kind of lore or background that Godzilla does. I really rocks with King Kong. I know they had a fight way back when, and it was bad. Looking back at it, I remember watching it in the late 80s, early 90s, and I was like, it was black and white, and I think King Kong got hit with
the original King Kong movie, or the original King Kong versus Godzilla?
The original King Kong versus Godzilla.
Oh, yeah, that was 60s.
So, I remember King Kong getting electrocuted and him just, like, going wild. I was like, this is fucking great. And I loved the most recent King Kong movie. I've watched it a million times. People hated it. I'm like, you guys didn't get that. And Sam Jackson really staring
at... You're talking about Skull Island.
Yes, Skull Island.
Yeah.
And Samuel
Skull Island is my favorite freaking... Okay, before you continue... Skull Island needs all the freaking praise. That is my hands down favorite kaiju movie ever, period. I love Skull Island. Please continue.
I'm with you. I'm with you, and I'm here for it. And I loved the look Sam Jackson gave King Kong, where he looked like he wanted to walk up to him and fight him with his bare hands.
Yeah, he did.
So I loved everything about that movie. Brie Larson, Sam Jackson, Tom Hiddleston, they even, I can't remember the dude's name, he was in Step Brothers. Not a big fan of his, but even he did it all really well. The dude from
Riley?
Yeah, the two dudes from Straight Outta Compton were great. So I've been looking forward to this since the end credit, where heard the Godzilla scream out. I was like, yes, I'm waiting for this. And then it was supposed to be released last year, but due to the pandemic, and then HBO Max announced that it'll be on their streaming platform when it's released in theaters. And I am so damn excited for this. So we watched So we both individually watched the trailer. I'm watching this. I don't know if you could see the excitement in my face as I was viewing this. And I was like, and I have a friendly wager with a buddy of mine on Twitter, where the loser has to admit on their show that they were wrong about the victor. I have all my chips on King Kong. Hands down. She has her chips on Godzilla. And I honest to Odin, I can't wait for this movie. I'm really tempted to have a round table of people come on and just say their piece on it and just do a whole episode on it. But
yeah, well,
what did you think
of my number? For that.
So. Oh, yeah. You're patient number zero on that. So
let me just talk Godzilla for a second. So I do have a monster pedigree. I mean, I would say I'm a bigger Godzilla fan than I am a King Kong fan. And that is from the love of really old movies, and I do really love the original King Kong 1933. King Kong, like, it's an amazing movie. I love it so much. But I like I said, Skull Island won me over so much. And part of that is the pastiche angle that they went with. They're like, we're going to make a 70s war movie that's King Kong. And it was perfect. The film grain that was there, like the palette was, everything looked 70s. It was so perfect as a pastiche. So just me personally, I love pastiche. That's why I'm loving WandaVision so much right now. Like, I love how good of a 50s sitcom pastiche it is. So if you're not into that and that's not interesting to you, okay, that's fine. But like, that wins me over every time. Like, it all goes back to Weird Al for me. Like, the ability to make something in somebody else's voice is such a talent. And I love pastiches. So yeah, that alone, it's like, I'm there for it. And then, yeah, I loved the characters. I loved all the creatures that they came up with for Skull Island. That spider, like, I feel like I have seen so many freaking monster spiders and stuff. I am done. I don't need another spider. They had that one scene where the guy's like kind of walking through the trees, and then he looks up and some of the trees are actually spider legs. Like, that blew my mind. And then the leg comes down and like shish kebabs them, like Cannibal Holocaust style. Like, oh my God, blew my mind. Absolutely awesome. And just, I love the way that Kong ended up feeling like the hero in that movie. Really, really cool. Yeah. So Skull Island. So I loved King of the Monsters personally. I thought it was amazing. As a Godzilla fan who's seen almost every Godzilla movie multiple times, I loved it. I don't really get why Godzilla fans would complain about it. Like, it's the weirdest thing to me. I don't understand why they would complain about, like, the story being silly or whatever. It's like, you have seen all the other Godzilla movies, right? Because the stories are always terrible. You know, I would say, except for, like, you know, 4 or 5, the stories are not the reason why you're watching the Godzilla movie. You just care about the monsters. So, like, you know, it's like, was the story the best? No. Was it the worst? Fucking not even close. Like, not even close to the worst. So, I mean, try to sit through Space Godzilla sometime. Like, and not check your watch every 20 seconds. Like, seriously.
Pass.
But anyway, yeah. But anyway, yeah, I loved that movie. So, I don't know. I am down with this monster verse that they've created. And I am ready as hell for this. And that trailer. So you want to talk about the trailer itself now?
Yeah, let's talk about the trailer.
What'd you think?
I loved it. It gave you everything that you wanted. You saw the characters who were going to be in the movie. You saw like some returning characters. Billy, I think her name was Billy Bobby Brown or Millie Bobby Brown.
Millie.
And the gentleman from Atlanta, whose name, I love this guy. He played on Paperboy. Brian Tyree Henry, who, yep, I think is going to be a fucking star, even though he is already. I think he's going to be even more incredible as time goes on.
Yeah, he feels like a rising star, yeah.
I didn't
see him in that trailer. I didn't realize he was in this movie.
You he was in the background when they were sitting down. It looked like in a low-lit bar, maybe a club or something like that. Okay. But again, as a huge Godzilla fan, as a huge King Kong fan, one of the parts that I like is that he has a more human vibe to him.
Yeah.
So the fact that they made this little girl a connection to him, I think was incredibly smart. I think it was a great idea because it adds some heart to King Kong. I loved, and probably the best part about it was they gave us action. People want to see. So I have a friend who saw Godzilla and he didn't hate it, but he goes, I would have liked less talky talky and more smashy smashy.
That is every Godzilla movie that has ever existed, though. See, that's the thing that kills me about that complaint. It's like, there's more pound for pound kaiju on kaiju action in King of the Monsters than in like three quarters of all Godzilla movies, and yet that's what people say about the new one. Like, are you kidding me? Good God.
So, as a novice Godzilla fan, I didn't hate it, I didn't dislike it, and I didn't meh it. I watched it, and I was satiated. I was like, that was good. I don't need any more right now, but, you know, I may go back and have seconds later. Kong, Skull Island, I'll go back and watch that now. But,
I'm telling you, I agree. That's just my favorite. I think it's just the best, most well-done kaiju movie of all time. I just love it so much.
So, let me just say, I also, a major part of this is they had to make King Kong look like a formidable fighter, all while not making Godzilla look weak.
Right.
And they did that perfectly.
Right. And there was that little line, that one, like, missable line in Skull Island where they said that he's still growing and he's young. And you actually got to see there were skeletons when they went into, like, where the skull crawlers were coming out of the ground in Skull Island. And there are skeletons of, like, his parents or whoever that were far bigger than he was. So it was kind of like, you know, getting your, you know, cake and eating it, too. Having him big enough to be able to hold a lady in his hand, basically being around the size that the 1933 King Kong was. And now he's way too big to hold a lady.
So we had some technical difficulties. Sorry about that. But we're still discussing King Kong versus Godzilla. The last thing I heard when you were talking about now he's too big to hold this woman in his hand because, as you said, he's right. Still growing.
Right. Yeah, like in the 1933, you know, you have that very famous scene where he's holding Fay Wray and in his hand, and she's like the size, you know, she fits in his palm. So her, like, little feet are sticking out the bottom of his hand. At this point, his fingertip is the size of a house. So, he's just too big for that to happen. So it's like, all right, well, we'll make him this size now, but say that he's still growing. Really good idea. I mean, the moment in this trailer where he cold cocked Godzilla in the face was just the most amazing thing.
Yeah, and that was the part that everyone goes, oh, well, how was he going to fight Godzilla? I'm like, he said he was still growing. What do you mean? Right. And
it's a movie about giant monsters. Like, dude, I love how geeks, like, just randomly whip out their science. Like they care so much suddenly about science. Like, come on.
You know what? That's a perfect segue to the topic we had about Batman.
Yeah.
The phrase, Batman wins because he's Batman. And then there's the stipulation where something comes up and it goes, well, how much time does he have to plan?
With prep time. That's what it's like. Oh, Batman with enough prep time. Like, he's the only character that preps, apparently. Nobody else goes into a fight with any plan whatsoever. Only Batman gets that.
Yeah, it's weird as hell to me because I'm a comic book fan. I've been consistently reading comic books since about 2002. I've been consistently reading DC Comics since about 2015. While I've jumped in with, like, you know, the classics like Hush, Under the Red Hood, mm-hmm. Long Halloween, so on and so forth, I've been consistently reading them for the last 5 years. And I hate to break it to people, but Batman loses. And when he loses spectacularly. People forget how many times people around him have died. Shit, just last year, Bane snapped Alfred's fucking neck. Or maybe it was the year before. But Batman loses. Sorry. It happens. And this is a situation where he admitted that he thought he had everything planned out. And Alfred still died. So let's cut the shit with the Batman with prep time thing. And he's not the only hero who does it. Frank Castle is a master of planning. The Punisher Max series is a good example of it because he spends most of his time planning before he just runs into places because he wants to make sure that when he kills somebody, innocent people aren't getting slaughtered in the midst of all the chaos. Deadpool for all his idiocy, is a great planner. Wolverine, and if shit, Cyclops, sure. Cyclops did one of the dopest things in comic book history. He was fighting vampires. He called a priest. Blessed Iceman in ice form, because everything he shot was now holy water. Come the fuck on. That's how.
I love that. That's such a great idea. Oh my God, I love that.
Yeah, and I read that. I was like, and I looked at it. I'm like, is he blessing Iceman? Holy shit, that is a great idea.
Iceman is the holy shit.
And you're a fan of horror movies, so the shit?
Yes.
Oh, yes, the doo-doo. But the phrase Batman wins because he's Batman was actually one of the reasons why I didn't read Batman for a while, because I hated the Batman fandom. They're annoying.
It's annoying, yeah.
And it's funny, like, for all the people who love Batman, and it's like, oh, but I hate Wolverine. I'm like, how the fuck do you hate Wolverine but love Batman? And it was the same people are going, well, he should have killed Joker a million years ago. I'm like, Wolverine kills his villains.
Yeah.
Like, he has actively tried to kill Sabretooth every time he's fought him.
Right. See, that's the hypocrisy that gets me with Godzilla fans. It's like, okay, you can say that this movie is stupid. That's fine. But don't tell me that this movie is stupid, but all the other Godzilla movies are fine. Because they literally all do the same shit. There's never enough of all the, everything you just said. It's like, that's every Godzilla movie. So if you're going to complain about one, then just complain about it all. But yeah, same sort of thing, right? Like, same exact thing. You're going to complain about Wolverine but not Batman. Well, that's just because, you know, you're Batman's your boy and that's it. And, you know, I honestly, the Batman fandom, it also extends to Dick Grayson too, like big time. Anytime that Nightwing comes up in any sort of a fight, it's always Nightwing. It's always like, no, Nightwing can't be beaten ever. It's like, come on. You know, I like Dick Grayson, but.
Look, so do I. I'm a Dick Grayson fan. Actually, my favorite member of the Bat family is Jason Todd. I love the Red Hood. Red Hood is actually my favorite DC character. I was having a conversation with Lavelle last night. I was replaying Arkham Knight just for shits and giggles. And it never dawned on me how much Red Hood is the exact opposite of Bruce Wayne. One was born rich, one was born poor. Jason Todd has a ton of emotions that he can't keep in check. Batman can be very sullen and brooding. Jason Todd was more than willing to kill Joker. Him, not so much. One was born super poor. The other one was born super rich. So it's just funny that the two of them were literally born like opposite ends of everything that's going on. I'm trying to find the rest of the conversation.
Right, he's like the opposite of Bruce Wayne, but not a villain. Like, that's the one tweak. Because there's so many villains to heroes that are just the, you know, the reverse Flash. Like, they're the evil version of that character. And it's like, he is the opposite in all those ways, and yet he's not evil.
Yeah, and so here are the other ones.
He's super interesting.
So Red Hood doesn't mind teammates and admits it. We know Bruce is like, I'm not a teammate, even though I'm not a team player, even though I'm on like 1,000 teams. Red Hood's a jokester, Batman's serious. Red Hood loves his guns, Batman not so much. Red Hood willing to kill someone, we know Batman is not. So it's just funny, the two of them and the opposites, and it also explains why they always butt heads as much as they do. But back to the whole Nightwing thing. Nightwing's great. Great fighter. Decent detective, but he's not. He is the biggest balance of the Bat family. But there are parts of him that the other members do. Like Barbara Gordon is definitely smarter than him, as is Tim Drake. I don't know if there's a. Kate Kane is probably a better fighter than he is, and definitely more ruthless. Actually, the better fighter thing may be debatable. You have Jason Todd, who's definitely more ruthless and more willing to go other places that Nightwing won't. But Nightwing's a better fighter and basically keeps his emotions in check and his composure a lot better than Jason Todd does. So yes, he's probably the quote-unquote best member of the Bat family that's not Batman, but only because he's more of the Ryu of the Bat family. He's just completely balanced, you know what I mean? So he has a, I guess, a better personality, if you want it, depending on what you want, because he's more lighthearted. That's what he is. He's the lighthearted Batman. Essentially what it is. But yeah. Cut it out. And I hate to break this to people, T'Challa would hand Batman his fucking lunch with prep time.
with you know, you keep your fucking prep time. So have all the prep time you want.
So I had a buddy of mine, Ken, said that he goes, with prep time, if they both had prep time, he goes, it's up in the air, and obviously depends on the writer. He goes, but if they both met in an alleyway, he goes, T'Challa would beat the ever-loving shit out of Batman. And it's not even close. Like, T'Challa versus Bruce Wayne, it's not close. T'Challa's one of the smartest people in any comic book genre. He's a million times richer than Batman will ever be with more gadgets. And even when T'Challa he gave up his powers and all his riches, he was still a bad motherfucker. So, that's that. Do you have any final thoughts on Mr. Wayne? Listen, not Batman. Do you have any final thoughts on the Batman Uber fans?
Yeah, I just would say that, like you said, he loses. I hate to break it to you. Like, do you really want a character that wins every freaking fight ever? Like, that's so boring. My God. I think what makes Batman so great is that he does fall down and he figures out a way to win maybe the second time or something like that. But to just, like, blanket, he wins every single confrontation because I love him so much, is just annoying. So stop being annoying is my advice.
Yeah.
So, and I'm, you know, as an Iron Man fan, Iron Man would kick his ass. Like, give me a fucking break. Obviously, if he didn't have the suit, no, he wouldn't. But Batman has suits too. Batman's got his, like, you know, whatever Iron Man type suits.
Oh, God, yes.
What's to say that he's not wearing one of those suits? I don't know. If you're saying Tony Stark, like, on the street in an alley, is he going to beat up Batman? No. But if Iron Man comes against Batman, he's fucking toast. There's no chance he's going to beat Iron Man. Fuck you.
It's like the idea when someone goes, who wins in a fight between Batman and Superman? Yes, certainly. If Superman is foolish enough to get him... Okay, you know what? Fuck this. Injustice. There was a fight between Batman and Superman.
The games?
Yeah, and it was a comic. There was a comic book that went along with it.
Okay.
Superman whooped Batman's ass. He broke his back, and don't get me wrong. Superman was crazy. He was more ruthless. But if Superman wanted to kill Batman, it would happen. Batman has admitted that if Superman wants to kill him, there is nothing in the world he can do. Period. And in that same sense, if Iron Man wanted to destroy Batman, he could do it from fucking space.
Right.
He has a... Tony Stark has a weapon in space that he used to kill... but to take down the Hulk. And it destroyed an entire town. They had to evacuate the town. And then he dropped this laser. I forget what he called it. I think he called it Helios. What is Batman going to do to that? He's going to put his little cape around him?
Well, he's got prep time, so he's going to come up with a Helios-proof outfit, I guess.
If it could take out the Hulk, it could take out Batman. So let's just call it like it is. Now, I'm not going to say that the Punisher can beat Batman. Punisher gets his shit rocked. But let's calm down a little bit.
Sure. All right, so I really want to make sure we get to talk about the MCU. And I want to talk about where we think the X-Men should come in, how we think the X-Men movies should be in the MCU, and how, because you and I have had this conversation many times, I just want to have it on the show, how we feel that especially Wolverine should be introduced.
Well, first off, let me just say this. I don't think the X-Men truly work in movie form. I think that the X-Men should be a Disney Plus exclusive. I feel that their story should be told in increment parts that lead up to a movie. The X-Men, you can't tell their story in 2 hours. It's almost impossible. Sure, the first X-Men movie did a really decent job of it, but there were still a lot of parts that were left off. There were many...
Like, every villain that wasn't Magneto had, like, no lines, and, you know...
Rogue...
Cyclops and Storm were hardly in the movie, and...
Rogue didn't fight in 3 movies.
Yeah.
How...
She never felt like Rogue.
Yeah, like, it was just, she was just kind of there. Like, that's a problem. And also, Wolverine does not, Wolverine's my favorite character in comic books, but he doesn't, he should not be the focal point of an X-Men movie.
Agreed.
Like, Wolverine is the Fonzie of the X-Men. He's the cool one. He's the one Emma Frost said it best. He's the cool one and the one everyone remembers. Cyclops holds that team together. Period. That's just what it is. It isn't Xavier. It isn't Wolverine. It's a combination of Wolverine. It's a combination of Cyclops and Storm. They're the two people that really hold that team together. And more recently, Kitty Pryde has done a phenomenal job of being more than what she was when she started. And that's a whole other conversation for the X-Men in general. But I don't know how the X-Men... Okay, I do actually have an idea. I feel that they shouldn't even explain in movie form what happens. I feel that, like, at the end of a cutscene, Nick Fury should talk to someone and go, we need to deal with the mutant situation. Like, they've been around this whole time. But just like the Avengers of old... You just never even, like, unless you were a fan of all comic books, you may not have known the X-Men even existed in the Avengers universe. So why not do the same thing here? It's just kind of like, we need to deal with the mutant situation. And now you're like, holy shit! Like, you know what I mean? And then you have a way to introduce them. It's like, oh, and then it's like, oh, hey, fun fact, next month, we're going to start filming X-Men Origins, and we're going to start filming the backstory to Cyclops and doing all this other stuff. There are ways of doing this without necessarily involving them and having this big, elaborate way to bring them in. Sometimes it's really just that serious to go, they existed, we just didn't know. It's kind of like the Inhumans. The Inhumans existed. We didn't necessarily need to know that they were around.
Right.
You know what I mean? Captain Marvel. Apparently she was around since the 80s and early 90s. Right. We didn't know. Yeah. It's not that serious.
I agree with that 100%. I'm not interested in a whole overblown explanation of why, you know, a retcon explanation of why they're here now. I think that, you know, some people have said that perhaps the Thanos snap activated the mutants. I think they could be from an alternate timeline, an alternate Earth that, you know, bleeds now into this one. And now we have mutants, but they're actually from a different Earth. I think that would be fine. I think, you know... All that I'm not as interested in. I just want them to be here now. Like you said, okay, let's hit the ground running. Let's go. The main thing for me is, which I think it sounds like they're doing this, is to introduce certain key characters beforehand. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's like a little different than what they did with the Avengers. The Avengers, like, all right, we're going to give these characters their own movies first. All right, well, you know, maybe we don't need, you know, a rogue movie. But they're saying she's going to be introduced in Captain Marvel 2, which makes a lot of sense for those characters.
Absolutely. Awesome.
So, okay, so if she's going to be the villain or a villain or in it or something, great. That's amazing. Then we get this backstory of her as a bad guy, and we have her and Carol bumping heads, like, really early. And also, you know, Carol getting tied into the X-Men universe, which I loved. I loved in the 80s when she, like, was, you know, in Uncanny, she came in, and it was, like, right before when Rogue showed up at their door.
Yeah.
And she was, like, depowered because of Rogue, and then they had this crazy space adventure, and they went up and fought the Brood, and eventually Carol got new powers as Binary, and I don't know, I loved Carol Danvers because of that whole storyline, and I thought she was super awesome. I think it's a really good idea. Let's get used to these characters. If not in their own movies, that's fine. But introduce them in other movies so we at least get to know them. Because that's what was fun about Wolverine in, like, that giant size number one 1975 X-Men. All these other characters they made up. They made up Storm and Nightcrawler and Colossus and Thunderbird and all this stuff. And then it was like, but Wolverine, we knew. Because mm-hmm. he was introduced as a Hulk bad guy. So,
yep.
And he was popular enough that they, like, let's do something else with this character. Maybe give him a better mask. I don't know.
It's kind of like the Deadpool thing when he popped up in X-Force. No. New Mutants. Is it New Mutants? New Mutants. New Mutants. When he popped up in New Mutants, it was like, oh, okay. let's actually do it this way. Let's actually give him more, because people apparently like this guy. Mm-hmm. And now he's evolved 30 years later into maybe the most talked about comic book character on the internet in terms of what they can do with him. He's memeable, he's relatable, he's funny, yeah. And he has these layers to him that make him deeper than just this jokester.
Right. But I think that the main cool thing that does, if you say, all right, so let's just talk about the characters that have already been mentioned as possibly appearing in other things. So obviously the first one they announced was Rogue in Captain Marvel. That's been confirmed. Lately, it's been rumored that Storm is going to appear in Thor: Love and Thunder.
Oh.
Which is awesome, because, you know, then you can do... They're saying that, you know, the theory is that they're working towards the Thor core, and that, you know, we're going to have that tie. Because obviously, you know, even going back way further, I remember Storm getting the, like, Asgardian goddess outfit, mm-hmm. the blue cape. Like, that's been my favorite, like, low-key favorite Storm costume, period.
Low-key. I see what you did there.
Okay. That was accidental, but I'll take it. I intended... no, that is such a cool thing. So I love, you know, and obviously she has similar powers. It's a great idea. Like, cause like Wakanda is obvious, like Black Panther, that's obvious. Let's start her, introduce her in Black Panther 2. That's obvious. That would be cool too. But Thor, that is a fun connection. We'll get her to Wakanda. We'll definitely link her at some point, but it's like Thor, that's the harder connection to make. So let's just start with that. That's a great idea. Then we get to know, like, a little bit about Storm. We're hungry for more. Awesome. And then, like, obviously Wolverine's the other one. So the question of where does Wolverine show up has come up in our conversations, a lot of people's conversations. I think we both feel that a really cool place to introduce him would be a Hulk movie.
Mm-hmm.
But there are no plans for a Hulk movie. So I feel like if, you know, seeing as how we're getting the She-Hulk series... And seeing as how Mark Ruffalo is going to be on the show at some, you know, in some capacity, I'm sure we're not going to see a ton of Hulk. I think that we'll probably see, you know, Bruce Banner, and they'll save Hulk for like a key episode or two.
Absolutely.
You know, season finale sort of a thing or whatever like that, kind of like they did with Superman and when he appeared in Supergirl, and you know, it's like let's let the She-Hulk be the main character. She's the whole point of it. We don't want to scuttle that, but you know, we'll save that for something special. So I think if you're going to do that, wouldn't it be cool if something happened, Bruce was raging up in Canada and she finds out about it, feels like I'm going to go help him out, and She-Hulk becomes our way into that initial Hulk versus Wolverine sort of.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
There's a scene in Wolverine's first appearance before, because his first appeared in one issue, his first full appearance was in the next one. And he goes, you hear he's going to tussle, why don't you try yourself against the Wolverine? She-Hulk and Bruce, She-Hulk and Hulk are fighting, and that's how he pops in. He's in, like you said, they're in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, hey, Logan, we need you to take care of something. And he pops up. Imagine that popping up in the very last episode of She-Hulk.
Yeah,
imagine not even seeing him. Imagine only hearing the claws pop, and you just see the shadowy figure, and you hear mm-hmm. the voice.
I mean, it'd be like, you know, jeans creamed, check, done.
Yeah,
yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, I mean, that would be the best thing. Like, and everybody would go nuts, because there's always going to be this thing of this hurdle to get over of it's no longer Hugh Jackman. Because a lot of people really loved that performance. And for plenty of people, you said a lot of people don't realize that the Avengers and the X-Men were in the same universe. I mean, I bet a lot of people who got into those movies and who ended up liking Wolverine were not comic book readers at all. Maybe didn't even know he was a comic book. I mean, shit, I used to work with a lady who didn't know Batman was a comic book. I know that seems impossible, but, you know, there are people out there that just don't pay attention to all that shit. So it's entirely possible they didn't even know. Like, for them, Hugh Jackman is Wolverine, period. You know, they may say that see the mask and be like, oh my God, what is this stupid crap? But for me, I'm hoping they go full tilt boogie with Wolverine's costume, because that will so help the separation.
Yes.
So we'll be like, all right, we had the Hugh Jackman version was a Hugh Jackman version. This is the comic book version. He looks like he's supposed to look. Whoever the actor is, you know, I don't even, at this point, it's not like I don't care, but I don't have a guy that I feel like should be Wolverine. I don't know who.
I don't either. I have somebody that I wish could have played them when they were younger, but right now, no.
Yeah, I don't know. I just want him to do it right and to introduce the character right. And if it was something like that in the She-Hulk series, because we're not going to get a Hulk, so why not? But I would really, really desperately love that. And the other thing that I texted you about this week that I just, it was a new theory I had read is, you know, this whole thing of Chris Evans might be coming back. And, you know, he's denied it, but big deal. Every Marvel actor is denied appearing in whatever they were supposed to be appearing in. I mean, actually, the She-Hulk actress did. She denied it.
And now she...
And then it ended up being true. And she
same thing with, I can never remember the dude from Ant-Man's name.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd, same thing. Brandon Powers actually was the one who reminded me of that Paul Rudd denied it, but we all eventually found out that it was true.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact that Chris Evans is saying news to me, like, okay, whatever, it could mean anything. But if he does come back, that would be another really fun, totally different way to introduce Wolverine. And you know what? They don't have to be mutually exclusive. You could do both. Like,
yeah,
you could meet Wolverine as a flashback to Captain America in World War II. Like, the screenwriters wanted to do that for the first Avenger. He was supposed to be in that group with the Howling Commandos that Cap went and rescued. And I think it ended up being like, well, the waters are too muddy with Fox still owning the character. And, you know, they weren't going to say Wolverine anyway. They were going to say James Howlett, but they ended up just scrapping the idea. Yeah, but that's a fun idea. You know, that would have been a cool cameo.
Now allow me to take things a step further.
Sure.
Uncanny X-Men 268, where they told the story of Wolverine saving a young Black Widow, working with Captain America. This is before. This was obviously we knew who Wolverine was. He popped his claws and all that other stuff. But at that time, the world didn't know what mutants were. So when Captain America met Wolverine, he didn't know about Logan being a mutant and all this other stuff. And then Daniel Way wrote another story where this ended up leading to Wolverine training Black Widow when she was like 10 or 12 or some shit like that. So
they did the professional. That's pretty cool.
Which is, it's fucking dope. So yeah. Now you have this whole thing where Wolverine not only connects to Captain America in the MCU, but now he connects to Black Widow. And this being part of a training, this also can explain why she has so much red in her ledger, excuse me. She's more ruthless than, why she isn't as ruthless as she once was and why she may have been a killer because of her training with Wolverine and how beforehand she was destined and supposed to be this assassin that worked for Russia. This is one of the reasons why I love Wolverine as much as he does. He legitimately has a connection to everybody in the MCU. If it's, he's the Kevin, Wolverine's the Kevin Bacon of Marvel Comics. Yeah. You know, like it's I don't even know if it's 6 degrees of separation. It's like 3 degrees of separation when it comes to Wolverine.
6 degrees of Jimmy Logan.
That was a good one. But the idea of Wolverine popping into a Captain America movie or Wolverine appearing in a flashback with Captain America makes a lot of sense for multiple reasons. It happened in the animated series with the X-Men.
Yeah.
It's happened in the comic books. It happened in an animated comic book, series, Earth's Mightiest Heroes. And Wolverine in the most recent one with the animated series with the flashback with Captain America, Logan never popped his claws, because for a while he was brainwashed not to know that he had these claws, or there were issues with his memory where he forgot. Where there's a theory that there are certain parts of Logan's life that are so traumatic that his brain heals over them. So that explains why he didn't use his claws for so many years, because he didn't know he fucking had them. And when his bones he popped his claws and they were bone, it was like, holy shit, I didn't know. You know what I mean? So anyway, because of the connection that goes on with this, there are so many things that really, that you can, there are so many ways you can introduce them. Hell, you could introduce the X-Men at the end of, to your point, at the end of fucking Captain Marvel 2. Because Logan and Carol Danvers, other than James Rhodes, who Captain Marvel is, Carol Danvers is dating in the comic books, Logan is the closest male friend that she has. They play poker together, they hang out together, they talk, like, they are legitimate friends. And when she spent all this time with the X-Men, Logan was really the connection that brought them together. So, imagine at the final cutscene, Carol Danvers is either depowered or weaker.
Yeah.
And she's knocking on a door, and Wolverine answers the door, and all he says is, "Hey, bub," and that's it. Boom. There's a connection. There's Wolverine. We're good. You know what I mean? Like, there's...
It's just like ripping off the Band-Aid. It's like, you gotta do it somehow. Just do it, and, like, let's move forward, and let's do it. Let's have an X-Men movie. But,
yeah.
For Wolverine's introduction, like, if I really kind of want both. I want them to give us... If Chris Evans does come back, because if he doesn't, then fine, forget it.
Yeah.
Although you could do it with Black Widow, like you said. That actually...
Dude, you could do it with Bucky.
you could do it with Bucky.
He literally has a connection to the Winter Soldier as well.
You're right. You're like, Falcon and the Winter Soldier could be our way into that, technically. But I do like the idea of, like, okay, he's really old. He's been fighting for a very long time. Let's have that back in time old soldier Wolverine. But then also, let's also, I really want the Hulk. I really want that tie. Just like I said with the Storm and Thor tie, it's like, you got to make the tie at the beginning, because those are harder to work. Like, working a Hulk into an X-Men movie is going to be a lot harder than saying Wolverine fought the Hulk this one time years ago, and it was this thing that happened, but now he's dealing with all this other X-Men stuff, and we're never going to probably see that ever again. It's a lot easier to just do that from the beginning. A lot easier to tie Storm to Thor in the beginning before she has all her shit going on that has nothing to do with Thor. So, because you're right, you only have 2 hours to tell the story. And I do agree with you that in a lot of ways, I think series is the new way of telling long-form stories that are better than movies. And I'm really, really, really excited for the Moon Knight series with Oscar Isaac.
Oh, God. I don't know if we've ever talked about this on the actual show, but we can move on and discuss this as well. Our love for Moon Knight is, it's there. And I think we both got our introduction the same, our love for him the same way with the rebirth of him.
The Bottom?
Yes, thank you. I was trying to think of the writer's name, but The Bottom works perfectly. Like, the idea of him having the multiple personalities.
So he didn't have, they didn't go into the schizophrenia too much in The Bottom. That was the one that was like his big reintroduction, and David Finch was the artist.
Yes.
And to this day, David Finch is one of my top three guys. I think he's the most amazing artist, one of the most amazing artists working today.
So hold on, top. Let me just say this.
Yeah.
I am not a David Finch fan. Let me just say that. But, but let me tell you this. If you are going to draw a Batman comic book, you should have David Finch do it. He drew, it was my introduction, my big introduction to Batman. It was Tom King. When I really learned who he was and really got into it. And let me tell you, I couldn't have been more impressed with everything that I saw from him, because there are certain artists who can, it's a Charlie Huston who wrote The Bottom. But like, when he drew this particular Batman, he drew Gotham in this way that was exactly how you envision it in a realistic version of it. It was disgusting. It was gritty. There was trash all over this place. Commissioner Gordon looks like he smokes 8 cigarettes a day. And, like, you know, punches himself in the face because he hates living here. Batman looked like just old. Like, he looked like Batman, not Bruce Wayne. Batman looked like just this guy who's just angry, grizzled. But then you'd see Bruce Wayne. And while I have an issue with Finch because some of his... It's like, I shouldn't look at Moon Knight, and the only difference between Moon Knight and Captain America is blonde and brown hair. For some reason, when he drew Batman, it wasn't the same. It was just something about the way he drew...
You're saying like he draws the same face?
Yes. But I don't know what it was about his Batman art, but everything was just... My opinion of him completely changed after reading that Batman run with his art. I was just in awe of what he did. So
his darks and lights, I mean, his shadows are just incredible. I don't know. I'm definitely a big fan, but yeah, that was my introduction into loving the actual character and not just the look of the character, because ever since I was a kid, I had never read the character in anything, in any appearance ever. I read mostly Spider-Man and X-Men, and then in the 90s, I got way into like the Top Cow stuff. I was like reading Witchblade and The Darkness. I love Mark Silvestri also. Shout out to Mark Silvestri.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, I had never read Moon Knight, and I always thought he looked cool. That was it. It was just like a Boba Fett thing. It's like, I have no reason to love this character other than that they look cool, and I do. So, but finally, when The Bottom came out, I'm like, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to read this. I'm going to start here. And I read him for a while, and I really, you know, I think he's a cool character. I like fucked up characters. I like characters who fall, and he's crazy. So, you know, and obviously we're also both fans of the Sentry. And you know, crazy superheroes. It's a great idea. It's different, you know? And he's visually very, very cool looking movie. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, him being in a show and not a movie is just amazing. I'm very, very excited. And I don't know. I know not everybody is excited about the casting of Oscar Isaac. He actually was my number one pick going like way far back. And I feel like
you were this
a million years ago. And nobody was mentioning him at all in conjunction with that role. But I just, my reasoning was, I really feel like Oscar Isaac has these big eyes that emote so much. They're so like deep. And he really is going to be able to pull off the crazy.
Absolutely. And
he's a good actor. He's a good, solid actor.
I think he's going to do good. Can I just also just say, one of the things I loved about the Moon Knight thing was the whole dressing in white thing. Mm-hmm. And I love how The Bottom immediately hits on that. And he goes, when he was in on the West Coast, and he said Clint Barton used to make fun of him, he goes, Moon Knight... on the West Coast, and he used to laugh, and he goes, Moon Knight never understood. Moon Knight goes, Clint Barton thought it was funny. Clint Barton used to think a lot of things was funny. And I was like, damn, he just died, dude. He would goes, I don't wear white because I want to. I wear it in praise of my God. And I'm like, you are nutty. But then he went on to say, I wear it because I want them to see me coming. I want them to know that no matter how big of a target I am, when they their hands will be shaking so much that they couldn't hit the broadside of the moon. I was like, oh my God. And then the idea of him with the Warren Ellis run where he wore a white suit.
Yeah.
And because he was there was a warrant out for his arrest, he wasn't Moon Knight, he was Mr. Knight.
They call me Mr. Knight.
But I love the idea of the fact that he still wears that all white, despite the fact that he has his issues with Khonshu. And then the most recent stuff with Jason Aaron and the Khonshu, everything going on with Khonshu and how like they really upgraded Moon Knight as a character. The fact that he's always going to wear those vestments, I think, is a dope fucking idea. I love the fact that he's always going to be that guy. Like, he's always, and it's like he's gotten crazier. Everyone in the Marvel Universe knows he's crazy. And there was an interaction between him and the Punisher that may have been one of the best interactions of the year, of that year. Punisher says, hey, Moon Knight, still crazy? And Moon Knight goes, Yeah, you know, he goes, how's your moon god? He goes, he's fine. And then Moon Knight responds, how's your dead family?
Oh my god.
I was like, damn.
Oh my god.
And I just love it because it, like, Moon Knight does not give a flying fuck. I love it. He has a particular fighting style that I think people will both love and be confused by. One of his former partners said that Moon Knight has never met a punch that he'd rather take than dodge. He takes an absurd amount of pain. He's sadistic. He's brutal. He's just...
not sure what he's seeing is real?
Yeah. We don't even know if... okay,
we don't... Yeah, is Khonshu real or not?
We kind of know now because of the most recent run with the X-Men. I mean, not the X-Men, excuse me, with the Avengers. But before that, it was kind of up in the air on whether or not he was seeing this or was he fucking insane. And right. Then we have his cast of characters. Marlene, Frenchie, thank you. Those two characters, I think, are just as important to Moon Knight's story as Moon Knight is. Marlene is not your damsel in distress person. Marlene will fuck you up. I remember she was dating this one guy, and they got attacked. She put her keys in between her fingernails and in between her fingers, and then beat the shit out of this dude. Her boyfriend ran. When Moon Knight confronted her and then grabbed her by the shoulder, she turned around, punched him, and then kicked him in the nuts, and then walked away and was like, don't touch me. Marlene was along for all that mercenary stuff that they were going in. So she's not someone to be fucked with as well. And then we also have the Frenchie, his pilot. I wouldn't call him his butler, but it's probably as close to his best friend as possible. And right. In the bottom, we find out that Frenchie is gay. And immediately, Moon Knight is upset. But he's not upset that he's gay. He's upset that he never told him. And I was like, oh, I can understand what that's like when you're so close to somebody and they don't feel the need to tell you. But in that same sense, that's not necessarily any of Moon Knight's business. And I love that when something happened to Frenchie and he met... I forget his partner's name, but they shook hands, like they liked each other, they were really friendly. Yeah. And Moon Knight just acted as business as usual, because realistically that's how it should be. This person loves my friend, so to me they're family. Mm-hmm. Those are two characters that I really feel that really need to get involved. We could talk about Raoul Bushman, but I don't know if he necessarily needs to be that. I think because of your pedigree when it comes to monsters, I'm pretty sure you want to see what the hell is his name? Russell.
Yeah, Jack Russell.
Jack Russell. I knew it was a terrier. Jack Russell, werewolf.
Definitely a terrier.
Like Werewolf by Night. I know you really want to see that fight. My favorite artist, Mike Diodato Jr., drew a flashback issue of Moon Knight where they fought, where he was fighting Jack Russell. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people realize how important Moon Knight is, because unlike She-Hulk, who's recognizable, unlike Kamala Khan, who's important to just the Muslim community in general, Moon Knight has...
And also, let's face it, new audiences.
Yes.
Just the fact that she is a very popular new character that doesn't have 60 years of history is really, really important.
Yeah, it's like...
a new character who's, like, super popular.
Yeah, it's the Miles Morales thing. When you have these characters who are less... I think, I want to say Miles may be hitting the 10-year mark soon. But I know Kamala Khan is not 10 years old. Her character isn't 10 years old.
Right, right.
So...
And they did something... They did two differences. They had... they're like, all right, we're going to do a new version of an old character... But unlike Miles Morales and, like, you know, Riri Williams, and she doesn't have the same power set at all. She has nothing to do with it. So they're like, all right, we're going to make her stretchy, which that in and of itself is a male power. They never make stretchy females.
I never thought about that, but you're right.
What's that?
I never thought about that, but you're right. But it's funny because it's not even just the stretchy. She's stretchy. She has superhuman strength, and she has a healing factor. But I have never noticed until you said something that stretchy powers has predominantly been a male superpower. I never noticed
100%. I think it's because it's just not sexy. Like, they're always very silly. Whenever you see anybody, you know, Plastic Man was a pure comedy character, but obviously there are plenty of others. There's, like, the Elastic Man and, you know, Mr. Fantastic, obviously. But, like, they always look kind of silly. So you can't have, like, this sexy comic book bombshell who then stretches and becomes, like, kind of gross. So, you know, with her, she's her point is not to be sexy. So I feel like they're like, no, fuck it. We're going to do the first stretchy lady. Like, fuck it. And it's really, really cool. So, I mean, they did something totally different. Like, there's so many levels to how different Kamala Khan is. But anyway, back to real quick to Moon Knight. So, yeah, you mentioned Jack Russell. I really, not only does the monster love inside of me want to see Moon Knight fight a werewolf, but also that is, like, the origins of the character. He started out in Werewolf by Night. So, if... You know, I love going back to the source material. I love it when people look all the way back, not just to the last 5 years, but, like, do your homework. Mm-hmm. This is where the character started. And my most, like, deep-seated, heartfelt hope for this Moon Knight series is that it will be our entrance into the horror side of Marvel. And if you have him fighting a freaking werewolf, then guess what? That is a really good entrance point. And also, straight up, like, Ethan Hawke would be an amazing werewolf. Oh,
God, that's great casting. Can I tell you
They haven't said who he's playing, but, and everybody's like, oh, it better not be Raoul Bushman. Oh, Raoul Bushman's black. I'm like, why the fuck would you think it was Raoul Bushman? That makes no sense. Of course he's not going to be Bushman. That would be ridiculous. Like, Jack Russell, though, oh, yeah, he'd be perfect.
Can I tell you my one concern about Moon Knight on Disney Plus is I want to know how they're going to deal with his violent side.
We're going to have to see, yeah.
With Wolverine, I wonder that as well, but there are ways around it. They did a good job with it in the X-Men, but I also feel that Wolverine is a rated R character. We saw that in Logan, which was the only good Wolverine movie. I am concerned about that because... Sure, he can be looked at as the Marvel's version of Moon Knight, like Deadpool is to Slade Wilson. It's a little different because Moon Knight is fucking tapped. And he will... The best way to describe it, there was a group of people who were trying to sexually assault a woman. Moon Knight beats the shit out of them, like, brutally. At one point, he puts a hook in someone's face on a chain and they hit a fire hydrant. He's beating the shit out of this dude with one of his batons. He looks over at the woman, extends the baton to her and goes, do you want a piece? To basically, like, you want to hit him too? And she, like, kind of looked down and goes, okay, more for me. And then he proceeds to keep beating him. I wonder how they're going to approach a character who is that kind of, like, demented. In that kind of, like, brutal.
It's a good question. I don't know. We'll have to see. I hope they can find the balance and give us enough action. I mean, it doesn't have to be as violent as Logan. Like, I love Logan, but it doesn't have to be that to be still a good Wolverine story.
Yes.
You can have a good Wolverine story that's less violent than that. There has to be violence. But, you know, I mean, you can do it. So it depends, and I know it's a very valid concern, I would say, because it should be its own thing. It should be very violent. It should be more like the Netflix verse, you know, the Daredevil and stuff like that. But yeah, I'm just really hoping that we're gonna start to see new pocket tangent universes, not literally different universes, but little corners of the MCU that these series are gonna hopefully point to. And just like WandaVision is going straight into Doctor Strange, and, you know, everybody's, you know, that was confirmed a long time ago. And then everybody's big theory now is that, you know, we're going to get to see Mephisto at some point in the show, and that might be the entrance into that, which is it's a great idea, but we'll see, you know. But I'm hoping that that's what happens every time, where you're like, oh my god, I wasn't expecting Mephisto here. Yes. So I'm hoping that, like, oh, you know, at the end of Moon Knight, it's like, oh my god, Ghost Rider. Like, you know, wouldn't that be cool? Like, that would be really fun if we can get into, because they've been clearly trying to do the dark side for a while now, and like, even at the beginning when Hellstrom was coming out, like,
hold on, time out, I'm sorry. It
wasn't even out yet, and they're like, yeah, no, forget we said that.
We're Hellstrom even... was awful.
It dear, was awful.
Dear
was
god.
Awful. Let's talk some Lock and Key.
All right, before we go, let's talk some Lock and Key. I literally just regurgitated exactly what Steve Van Samson said. I had to pause because I had to pee. So...
these things happen, man. It's okay.
So, first off, actually, let's tease a little bit. First off, did you finish The Boys?
I did.
What did you think of season two?
I loved it. I mean, I love the show. I know you're a big comic book fan of, like, of that series, and you have some issues with the show, mm-hmm. But in general, you like it, right?
I absolutely love it. I think...
okay, cool.
I have issues with certain things, but the issues that I have don't take anything away from the fact that it is a superb show. Mm. And my favorite moment came in the most recent season, in the very last episode, where he asked Butcher, when Butcher asked him, well, how come you don't do anything about it? I can't run around and act foolish like some maniac. That is a white man's luxury. And I was like, oh, yeah. Season two of The Boys was well aware of not only the climate, but the audience. Mm-hmm. People understood what was going on in the world, how a lot of poor and disenfranchised people, with, I think, makes up the majority of their viewers. And they were just like, hey, if you don't like the way we're going, then you can go fuck yourself. But I also would not expect anything less from Seth Rogen, because he is going to be an upstanding person who understands the responsibility of his platform. So I wasn't shocked by it at all. But the fact that they teased you so, like, not teased you, but they just, my emotions with Stormfront were just so damn high.
Yep.
And they waited until the last fucking minute to really give you that moment of, like, relief. And I was like, damn, that was well done. I could not praise them enough
for what they did. The catharsis was real. As she's laying on the ground all burnt up with no limbs. Oh my god.
Yeah, and we can spoil the shit out of it now. It's been months. So did you have a favorite moment from the show?
You know, so I've seen the whole show. I've seen every episode once, and now it's been a few months since I stopped watching the second season. I don't know that I have, like, one favorite moment per se that's coming to mind, but I just really, really enjoyed all of the like, all the characters for different reasons. And, like, you know, I loved it when you would build up clashes between characters and you finally got to see what would happen. And, like, I started out the series thinking wrongly that Starlight was going to kind of be more of a force than she ended up being. Like, she ends up joining the boys, which is cool and everything. But, like, I was kind of thinking they were going to set her up as, like, maybe she's powerful enough to dethrone, to kill Homelander or something like that. And, of course, that seems ridiculous now, and that was just stupid. But that was my initial thought based on, like, how powerful she was, like, around electricity, and she was making, like, everything pop and everything. But then they're like, oh, well, her powers are tied to that. So she's, like, draining the power from all the electricity around her, and that's sort of, like, how it works. So it's a little bit different, but, yeah, I mean, still, that there was that moment when she was helping, she arrived with Homelander and all them, and they were like, I don't know, it was with the, like, the dead whale was there, and the boys were trying to escape, and she has that moment, and you're not sure if she's going to turn and maybe defend Huey.
Yeah.
And maybe fight Homelander. I mean, like, these moments of you just don't know what's going to happen next are really fucking good.
They are.
And some of the twists have been just very awesome. Didn't see any of it coming. Honestly, I think my favorite character for their arc, even though I wish they were in it more, but I kind of really like Queen Maeve.
Queen Maeve was dope. Is
really awesome. And how damaged she is and disillusioned she is and to the level, and you're really not sure if there's even a good person or if there even was ever a good person in there that was the person that Stormfront was a fan of and that everybody thinks is she is, but of course it's just all a lie. It's like, was she ever good? Did she ever give a shit? And it's like, yes, she did. That question was answered. Yes, she once at one point before she was beaten so down by the system, she did give a shit. Mm-hmm. And the tenseness whenever, like, Homelander is played so freaking effectively by Anthony Starr. Like, he does such an amazing job. I hate his guts as a character. Just cannot hate him more, but that is just, that's because the actor is doing such a good job. He is like every bully, every frat guy, every, like, asshole frat guy in college. Like, he's so effective in this role. And there are so many places that they put him where you're like, oh my God, he is going to... He's wearing a smile. He's saying nice stuff in a threatening way. And I've known so many people like this in my life. And it's like, oh my God, he's perfect. And when they started doing that stuff with Queen Maeve has a girlfriend. And she is super scared that Homelander's going to find out and that the girlfriend's going to end up getting killed.
Yes.
And she has to be so specific with the thing she says and the tone and the smile on her face. And, you know, everything has to be just so perfect. But Homelander isn't an idiot. And he kind of just sees through it all. And you're like, oh, my God, like, what's going to happen? What's he going to do? You just never know what Homelander's going to do. And I've been wrong so many times over the course of the show. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I have a favorite moment, but it's stuff like that that makes me love the show.
And I also want to point out, before we move on to the next show, I want to point out that Anthony Starr is the exact opposite of his character, which is also hysterical to me, because he's pro-mask, he's pro-people, he's like, he seems like everything, and it's funny to me when you see him as Homelander as opposed to when you see him as Anthony Starr, and you're like, that's so funny. He's not even blonde, which is even funnier. Next up, and we could probably just go on this briefly because it's been a long time since it happened. Umbrella Academy Season 2 came out. I wasn't a huge fan of Season 1, but Season 2 was so good that I think I'm going to have to go back and rewatch Season 1.
Yeah, this is so funny. Like, we've talked about so many things that we wanted to talk about together on your show for like 6 months. So, like, we're trying to cram it all in right now. It's really funny.
It is.
Yeah, the Umbrella Academy... I really enjoyed both seasons. I wouldn't say it's like a 10 for me, but maybe a solid 8.5. Like I definitely like it. It's a very cool show. What won me over about Season 2 was I was kind of bummed that they were sticking as close to the general arc of Season 1. It really felt very much like, oh, you know, it's up to 5, you know, it's all, you know, trying to avert the one thing, and now it's just a bigger disaster that's going to happen. It just moved. It just shifted to a different, slightly bigger thing. And I don't know. It kind of annoyed me at the beginning of that season, of Season 2. And then, like, everything that I saw along the way was so different. And it was great. It was a fun show to watch all around. And I did end up liking Season 2 better than Season 1. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed every time they brought in Papa Harkness and showed us a little flashback. He became the smoke monster for me. Like, back when I used to care about Lost, before I knew that it sucked, and I was, like, still invested in it. And, like, the smoke monster would show up out of nowhere, and you'd be like, oh, my God, this is a smoke monster episode? This is amazing. I had no idea. And it's like that when they would go back and you'd see Harkness doing something, and it's like, what is he doing? Oh, my God, this is crazy. Because they treat him like so precious.
Yes.
He's so precious in that series. You know, they're very careful where they put him in. And every time he shows up, it's like, oh my God, what's the dad? Oh my God, it's the dad. What is his deal? We still don't know.
Exactly. And then, like, you find out that, like, he's not human and his whole thing goes on. And it's like, oh my God, this is so great. And then they pop back into the future or the present. And you're like, oh my God, what are they going to do now? And da-da-da-da. Before we move on to the meat and potatoes of what we really want to discuss, shout out to Elliot Page for embracing her true self. I love it. I can't wait to see what he does next with Vanya coming up. I think it's going to be dope. But I want to say shout out to Elliot Page for acknowledging who they are really inside. I think it's amazing. I just want to shout that out, because anybody who has the courage to be who they really are inside, even in this day and age, you'd assume it to be more accepted, but you still have people who have issues with it. And there's a difference between having an issue with something as opposed to not understanding it. There's a lot of things that I don't understand. I personally do not understand what it's like to not be the person that you are, but I can also understand what it's like when someone's hiding who they truly feel they are. So shout out to Elliot Page, because it took a lot of courage, even if, like, you know, a lot of courage, a lot of bravery to do what they did. So I just want to make sure that I shout that out.
Yeah, hell yeah. And shout out to my friend Gwen T. Troll, who just legally changed her name on the 21st of January.
So what?
Literally last week, yep.
Shout out to her. That's fucking dope, man. Like, yeah, round of applause to you, man. Straight up and down. All right. Here's a subject me and Steve Van Sampson are going to agree on. Fuck Lock and Key.
The series.
The comic book is among one of the 10 best comic books I think anybody should read. I'll have another article. I have an article out on blackrabbit.com, BlackRabbit, on the, I won't say how many, the 9 comic book picks for the non-comic book fan. I'll be writing a part 2 for that, because Lock and Key definitely needs to be on this list. When I heard Lock and Key was going to be a Netflix show, I got excited. The Lock and Key comic book is dark. It's not necessarily violent. When I say dark, it's just the tone. It hits on a lot of adult topics, even though the main characters are teenagers and high school students. There's a lot that goes on. The imagery of it can be very grim. And I couldn't wait to see what they did with it. And then Netflix decided to give us the Harry Potter version of it, and I didn't get past episode 7. I still haven't gone back.
The Harry Potter version. It's like the CW Riverdale version of the comic.
I'm one of those people, like, once something gets started, I really need to finish it. It was so bad that I couldn't get past episode 7. I was like, I'm good. And when season 2 eventually gets announced, I'll go back and I'll watch the last few episodes. But the only time I can think that I've been more disappointed with a comic book adaptation is what they did to Deadpool and Wolverine Origins. Like, that's how amped up I was for this Lock and Key comic book. Lock and Key was one of the comics that got me into something that things that weren't Marvel and DC. I just happened to be on Marvel Unlimited, and I'd read a few independent comic books, and they were good, but they weren't something that I was like, you know what, I'll go back and I'll read this again. I picked up Lock and Key just off a whim, said, you know what, it's free on Unlimited to borrow, I'll read it. And I loved it. I couldn't put it down. Like, I went through all, I want to say 7 or 8 volumes in a week. I couldn't stop reading it. I was like, no, I'm going to continue reading this until the very end.
Yeah.
And then, and this is a crucial thing, and you as a writer understand this, the ending has to be satisfying. Otherwise, everything in between doesn't really matter. And the ending and the conclusion to Lock and Key, the comic book series, gave me all sorts of happy feelings. It was emotional. And just when you think things are going to just be like this, so sad, something happens and you're like, oh my God, thank you for this. You didn't have to give this to us, but you did, and I appreciate it. Lock and Key is, if you're a fan of, you know what, even if you're not a fan of comic books, if you enjoy good stories, Lock and Key, the comic book, is absolutely worth it. It's phenomenal. It's extraordinary. I don't know if there are enough good adjectives to describe it. And the artwork may not have worked in other comic books, but it was absolutely flawless for what they gave us with this story.
Yeah, Gabriel Rodriguez drew the entire run of that comic. He is the sole artist, including the covers. Everything is Gabriel Rodriguez.
Oh my God, and those covers. Oh my God, the covers for these books.
Very stylized. It really worked. It really, you know, every single big volume is focusing on one major key. You might find other keys in there, but I don't know, like, by all, it kills me. This show should have worked. This show is a property that does lend itself to working as a TV show, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And they were so concerned about making Lock and Key soup. Just like, you know, it's like, oh, well, we have the ingredients. We'll put them in a blender, and we have something new. And I freaking hate it so much when they do that and then treat it like it's for the fans. Oh, we're doing this so the fans can have something new to see, so they won't know everything that's coming. No. No fan of anything ever has ever wanted that. Everybody who's a super fan of something wants it to be the thing that they love. Obviously, it's not going to be one-to-one, but if it's, you know, if the changes you make sense, it's fine. It's totally fine. Like, you know, you still like The Boys. It's obviously not even close to one-to-one, but the spirit and everything, the characters feel right. Like, this is so freaking wrong. You know who I hated the most on this show was the mom, Nina. Nina was the most pathetic piece of crap, waste of a character in this show. And in the character, she was great. In a comic, I mean, she was great. She was a great character in the comics. She was awesome. She had, like, a major alcohol addiction that, like, kind of was spawned from the death of her husband. Like, she really fell into the bottle. And she was very, very flawed, and she came out of it. But the show did something weird, which is they invented a new rule for the keys, which was, essentially, if you don't have the keys, if you don't, like, use them actively, you instantly forget that they exist. So what kept happening is Nina would be in the dark as the kids are doing these magical things with these magical keys, and she'd be like, oh, I have no idea what's going on, and then something would happen, and she'd be like, oh, bam, she sees magic in front of her face, and it's impossible, and she's all shocked, and then she would turn around, and 5 seconds later, not remember that happened. Well, that didn't exist in the comics. The idea was supposed to be that as years passed, just like as you forget what it's like to be a little kid and have these, like, you know, moments of playing make-believe with your friends and stuff, and you can't remember all this stuff, you don't have the same sort of imagination as an adult, you don't remember all the same stuff. So, you know, it's like that. The magic of childhood fades, and as you grow up, you sort of forget the keys and that you ever had fun with them and did the magic and all that stuff. It sort of goes away, it fades. And that's fine. That happens over, like, your life.
Absolutely.
But this is like, oh, no, she's a grown-up, and she doesn't have a key on her person, so she literally can turn around 5 seconds later, forget that it just happened. So what this made was for about 5 or 6 different moments of the same moment, of her being dumb, not knowing what's going on, then learning, seeing magic, going, oh my God, what's going on here? And then turning around and forgetting it instantly. It's like, are you kidding me? I cannot watch this. I cannot watch Nina discover magic and forget it in 5 seconds one more fucking time. Oh my God, like, so stupid and annoying. She was so useless. It made her completely pointless. She could never help with anything because she just kept forgetting that all the problems even existed.
So, and that was one of the big issues I had with it, was because I'm going to try to get this out.
Okay, we're here for it.
The mother was such a flawed character that watching her rise to prominence, I think would maybe be the best word. No, watching her turn her life around from negative to positive was such an important part of the story.
Yes.
And they ruined it in two episodes. It took me a while to get through seven episodes of this. It was difficult. And what's even worse about it is the two kids who played the lead characters were good. And this is one of those situations where an actor is only as good as the material that was given. I didn't like the youngest brother. He annoyed me to no end. He was just bothersome. But the oldest brother and the middle child, the daughter, she's great. I was like, I can rock with this. The dude who plays Iceman and the X-Men and also played Lamplighter in The Boys, I thought he was serviceable. I don't know if they made him gay in the TV series. I can't remember. But I also remember that being a crucial part to one of the issues that he had in the comic book.
And I also can't remember if they brought that aspect into the character of the show or not. I don't recall.
And that was also part of one of the things with the keys, where he could switch sexes. And like
the gender key.
Thank you. And that was an important part because no one understood why that was the only key he would use. But when we see this, we're like, okay, it makes sense. It adds to the story in such a way that as everything progresses, you're enjoying everything you're reading. And this, and to our conversation we had in the previous episode we recorded, I didn't enjoy this. It's one thing to not like something, but kind of keep watching it because you started it. I legitimately did not enjoy Lock and Key. There were parts of the show that I thought were good. Like I said, the two actors who played the characters, I'm going to look their name up now while I'm talking, but there were parts of this.
The characters are Tyler and Kinsey.
Tyler and Kinsey. Tyler was played by the actors
are Connor Jessup and Amelia Jones.
Thank you. They rocked. I was like, thank you. Thank you for having good casting, and thank you for putting them in a place to succeed. But the problem is, outside of those two, I didn't enjoy anything at all. I found myself being more annoyed than anything. There were certain episodes where I would have to stop and go, I can't watch anymore. I can't imagine how I would have felt if this was a show that I had to review. I wrote one article on it about how it's like this show just isn't what I wanted it to be. And I don't know if this show gets past the season 2. Unless there's a dramatic change in what's going on, I don't even know if the viewers actually talked about this, because there are shows that go on, even bingeable shows. People always talk about these shows that you can watch in one season and how it's a mistake and da-da-da-da, but I don't think people realize that, like, people will go back to these shows. Like, they're comfort shows. Like, The Office, 30 Rock, Married with Children, Seinfeld, they're comfort shows.
I mean, The Watchmen is one season and it's perfect. I mean...
Oh, like, God, don't get me started on the flawlessness of the fucking Watchmen.
I won't get you started. I'm just saying. Like, that was one season and it's perfect. So, really quick, so you mentioned the guy who plays the brother Duncan. That's actually Aaron Ashmore. Aaron Ashmore is not the guy Aaron Ashmore is the brother of Sean Ashmore, who played Iceman and who plays Lamplighter on The Boys.
Wait, what?
Aaron Ashmore is his twin brother, and he is actually also in a bunch of stuff.
Oh, fuck you! Are you serious?
I am dead serious. He was in a show called Warehouse 13 I used to enjoy. He was also Jimmy Olsen in Smallville.
Oh, so kiss! Kiss my ass! I didn't know this.
I will not.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at it now. I'm like, I can't believe that.
Yeah, they're like identical. It's crazy. I just want to mention one good thing about the show. You're talking about performances.
Hold up! Time out. Whenever we bring in Watchmen, I have to say, Yala Abdul Mateen II. He's slanging lumber. Go on.
Okay. The actress who played the villain of Lock and Key is, her name is, I'm probably going to screw it up, Laisla de Oliveira? Laisla de Oliveira.
Yeah, it looks like Laisla de Oliveira.
So she, I think, not only looks exactly like the drawings, but did a pretty damn good job. I just think that they wrote the character bad.
Absolutely.
I like the performance. I didn't like what they did with Dodge, per se, and I didn't agree with any of the changes. I thought all of it was they rushed parts, and they made other things like take too long, and it's all soup. It's just soup. The things are all there, but they're connected weird now. Now the carrots are touching the peas instead of the potatoes, and I don't know.
It's not even soup. I think your analogy with the blender makes more sense. It's a smoothie.
Yeah, it's a smoothie. But she did a very good job. I think she's very attractive and really does look like the character. And at all times, I thought she was a good actress.
So absolutely.
I will shout out to her. I think she did a good job.
And one of the scenes that sticks out in my head was the key with the Anywhere key. I think it's called the Anywhere key, where she opened the door and threw the kid in front of a train.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, shit. And I was like, that may be the most frustrating part of the show, is there would be moments where you're like, holy fuck, this is great. And then they'd hit you with this other stuff, and you're like, holy fuck, this is awful. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we had this conversation, but the people, the creators who did The House on Haunted, and then the next one, I can't remember what the second one was, they should have been the one in charge of
Lock and Key. Oh, no, you're talking about The Haunting of Hill House, and then yes. The Haunting of some other house. I didn't watch the second season yet.
They should have been in charge of Lock and Key. Because especially when you watch the, if and when, what did you think of season one of that?
I liked it.
So
it had one twist too many at the end that made it a little silly, but I think it was a good show, and it was really, it was scary at times. Like, some of the ghosts were scary.
Oh God, the one who like walked but floated, that yep. fucked my head up, and it was during the day. And he was walking in the middle of the daytime, and I was watching it in the daytime, and I'm like, this is fucking creepy.
The guy who wanted his hat back.
Yeah.
Didn't he have like a cane?
Yes.
Wasn't he like, he was floating, but using the cane to float or something?
Yeah.
Super creepy. Yeah.
I will say though, the one thing that cracked me up to myself was, I was like, only thing I could think was, it's okay. He just wanted his machete back. but watching those two particular series, all I could think was, like, this is what Lock and Key was missing. It was missing an element of horror that made this show so well. And I had a conversation with my homegirl, Stephanie, from the Mocha Minutes podcast, and we were discussing Clayface. And she was saying how Clayface doesn't work in the current DCEU, and I agreed with her. And the reason I agreed with her was because Clayface is such this malleable character that lends itself to horror. Like, he doesn't work in the PG-13 version of Batman. Clayface belongs in Titans, where you're seeing this dude who does all these really fucked up and really twisted things because he doesn't have the life that he feels he deserves. And when you're seeing this ball of clay and that's just kind of moving around, and it's scary. It should be horrific. Clayface should be a horrific character. You shouldn't see Clayface and go, oh, it's Clayface. You should go, oh, it's Clayface. You know what I mean? And I feel that was a problem with Lock and Key. There were no elements of horror. And I really feel that when you watch the season two of House on Hill, whatever the fuck, you'll understand what I mean by they made a mistake with the creative team. And they dropped the ball with everything that it could have been. We could have been looking at a classic story and something that put Netflix back on the map, especially when HBO Max has been stepping their game up significantly with their content, as has Disney Plus, as has Amazon and Hulu. Mm-hmm. And while Netflix has been the company that kind of put everything on the map, they're slowly losing footing with these other streaming platforms that have been listening to the fans and watching what's going on. I hope that season two gives us what we just, what fans of the comic book and even just fans of TV in general deserve, because season one wasn't it.
I agree. And I mean, the other thing too is that this is a, you know, a pretty loved indie comic book. I mean, you know, I say it's not really indie, but it's not one of the big two or three.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, written by Joe Hill, who's an awesome author, a very, very popular author, obviously Stephen King's son, but, you know,
absolutely. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense now.
What's that?
That makes so much sense now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so he didn't use the name King, and for the longest time, he didn't talk about it, and he didn't want to even use his picture and stuff, like, before he put out his first book, because he wrote some Spider-Man comics and stuff, and he, you know, when he was trying to get his start, he didn't want to use the fact that he was Stephen King's son as the reason why he was successful. He wanted to try to do it on his own. And he's a very, very talented writer, and I've written most of the stuff he's written. And you know, this is something like in 2011, it was supposed to come out. It was there's a pilot that they filmed in 2011, totally different cast, and it didn't get picked up, but, you know, a lot of people have been waiting for this adaptation for a long time.
Hill House.
Yeah, it's The Haunting of Hill House, and the new one is The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Wait, did he do that?
No, but...
No, I'm just looking at, like, I'm looking at Joe Hill's, I typed in... Joe Hill.
Oh, that's just a coincidence. Okay, because you kept saying the name of the show wrong, because it's not The House on Haunted Hill, it's The Haunting of Hill House.
Yeah,
those are two. The House on Haunted Hill is a thing though. But
yeah,
So Walking Key was like an anticipated thing that people did care about. Is my point.
Yeah,
it's just a bummer. I agree. I think it sucked. I'm actually not even gonna watch season two because I really just feel bad for my wife who had to listen to me bitch like more and more the entire time the show was on. So, like, if she wants to watch it, I'll just bow out because she'll have a better time without me there, I'm sure.
And it was funny. I'm with you because I honestly understand, like my wife finished. And I remember talking to her about this and I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And she goes, you're not going to finish it? I went, No, I'm good. And she was shocked because she knows me well enough to know that, like, I will continue to watch something even though I hate it. Even though I despise it. Oh, my God. So, I'm Googling. Here's another scene that really pissed me off. When the sister took her fear out of her head.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good 70% of the comic book with her, what's the word I'm looking for? With her upbringing, her personality, her characteristics. It was like, and then the whole thing was like, oh, we're going to go inside each other's head. I'm like, no, that's not what happens. Please stop it.
And she had a totally different reason for doing it in the show. I can't remember even what it was, but it was completely different. Like in the comic, the whole point was she wanted to remove her fear and her... like sadness, right? She didn't want to cry anymore. She was sick of crying.
Oh, yes, for a dude.
About her dad getting killed and being afraid. So she was like, I'm going to take away my sadness and my fear, and I'm going to be better off for it. And then she ended up not being better off for it. But, you know, that was the genesis of why she did that. And I feel like in the show it was because she wanted to be braver around a boy or something.
That's exactly what it was, and it was fucking stupid.
Oh my God, it's like just completely killing the whole freaking point of these characters and like just neutering all these decisions that they made that were such big character moments and, you know, reasons for why they, you know, motivations for all this stuff and just making it dumb. So, yeah, I don't know.
God. Part of me really wishes I'd never revisited that, but part of me...
But I've read the comic book three times.
I'm on two.
So, yeah, I love it. I really love it.
And let me tell you, anybody listening, if you're looking for something to just read, pick up Lock and Key, Locke and Key, Joe Hill. I'm actually looking up some of the artwork and looking. I saw Joe Hill. I'm like, oh my God, he really does look like his dad. It's uncanny. It's disappointing. I also wonder how he feels about it, to be honest with you. Because I kind of feel like me and Maria, my wife, were talking about this, how TV shows and movies always bastardize Stephen King novels. And there was one book she read, and she couldn't wait for the made-for-TV movie. And we both watched it together, and she was, like visibly upset. And I go, are you okay? She goes, no, this is fucking awful. And I go, what happened? And she was breaking down all these little random parts that happened in the book that didn't happen in the show. This show came out maybe 5 or 6, 7 years ago. It was a made-for-TV thing. And she was going on and on about this, and then she
It wasn't Under the Dome, was it?
No.
That wasn't that long ago.
No. It was I forget what it was. I'm pretty sure if I called her in here she would know. But she just hated so much of it. But and to round it back up again, like, as comic book fans, we're late to the game when it comes to book adaptations coming into movies and TV shows. Like, you're a fan of books more, you know what I mean? So you get this double, you know what I mean? Because not only are you getting it from a fan of books, but you're also getting it from a fan of comic books. So for me, it's a little different, but like, I think this may have been the first time that I was completely anticipating a story from, like, not a Marvel in DC. Actually, no, it definitely was the first time since Deadpool that I was completely let down with what I saw. Like, that was just... it was deplorable. It was an abomination to the comic book, and that's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, I think we've said it. Yeah, bad.
All right, so this has been the Old Man Wade Show. I want to thank Steve Van Sansa for coming on and talking shit with me, because this is what we do. Tell everyone, I'm actually going to split this into 2 episodes. I didn't realize we're at 1 hour and 36 minutes, but, you know, I have stuff in the tank now. Tell everyone where they can find you.
You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Amazon, wherever you want. Just look up Steve Van Sampson. That's Sampson with no P. It's VanSamson. And you can check out my books on Amazon. I have The Bone Eater King, Marrow Dust, bunch of cool anthologies I'm a part of, and my brand new book is Mark of the Witchworm, which you can buy on roughhousepublishing.com right now. It's an epic fantasy book with horror elements, and there's a whole episode we did talking about it, so if you haven't heard that episode of the Old Man Wade Show, go check that out right now.
You can find me at oldmanwade.com. You can find me at oldmanwade.com on Twitter and Instagram. You can find me on the Old Man Wade Show Facebook page, where it is a safe space for everyone to voice their opinions, as long as you're not a dickhead. If you are a dickhead, I will delete you, delete the comment, and ban you, because I'm not with the fuck shit. I want this. Our page is a safe place for people to talk and laugh and joke and have discussions about things that they may or may not know about. And trust and believe, if me and Super Woke are asleep when we see a comment, when we get up, you'll be deleted. So I just want to let everyone know. Join the Old Man Wade Facebook page, because that's where we go to have fun. Steve Van Sampson comments a lot. He drops gems on things that I may not have known. He's super fun to interact with, and he will talk all sorts of shit with you. That's all I got to say about that. Steve Van Sampson, do you have anything to add?
One more thing. Damn it, Wade.
Damn it, Wade.